Hello and welcome to my channel, Vice Rhino here. Today I'm looking at a video titled The Scientific Evidence for God by the Rational Religion channel. I'm curious to see what scientific evidence for God they're going to present, so let's take a look.
In our last video, we showed that just because you can't see, hear, or measure something, doesn't mean you shouldn't believe in it.
I may look into that video at a later date because that seems odd to me. If something is completely undetectable, then yeah, I don't think there is a reason to believe in it. And yeah, we could start waxing philosophical about whether abstract concepts like math and logic count as measurable, but for the purposes of this video, I don't really care. We're talking about a god, an entity, a being, not an abstract concept. Though, to be fair, God often is reduced to the status of abstract concept in order to make arguments like this work.
Be it dark matter or love.
We may not be able to directly measure dark matter itself at this moment, but we know dark matter exists because it has a measurable effect on the universe. And while we don't really have the technology to accurately monitor all hormone levels and brain signals and all the other chemistry in a human body at any given time, the emotion of love is most definitely the result of chemical interactions in the brain, which, while not practical to measure in great detail, are measurable in theory, and we have a very good idea of which chemical combinations can affect these emotions. That's why emotion-altering drugs exist.
If God exists and he's, the creator of the universe, we wouldn't really expect him to be physically measurable because he's not a physical person.
Except when he is a physical... Oh, wait, this is a Muslim channel, so I can't just use the standard rebuttal assuming the premises of Christianity. Okay, sure, God may not be physical, but if you want him to have created the universe, then he must be able to physically interact with things. Therefore, if he also wanted us to believe in him, he is capable of providing physical evidence, and thus would not need logical argumentation-style apologetics. You'd just be able to point to the actual physical evidence.
Having said this, just because we can't measure God directly, doesn't mean we can't see signs of his existence in his creation.
Sure, indirect measurement is valid as well, such as the indirect measurements that demonstrate the existence of dark matter.
If God did make everything, you would assume that there'd be some fairly obvious signs that he made it.
Yes, I would.
The Big Bang, aka everything came from basically nothing.
The qualifier basically there demonstrates that you are aware of why the Big Bang doesn't really help your case here. So why are you using it?
Come on, people. That's not normal.
Not only is it not normal, it's not what the scientists believe. We can trace the universe back to the Big Bang, but we don't actually know what came before the Big Bang. Was it nothing? Did the singularity just always exist? Is the relatively new bouncing cosmology model correct, meaning the universe could be essentially infinite? Is the Hartle-Hawking hypothesis of matter already existing before time began, thereby making the ultimate question of origins a nonsensical question, correct? The truth is, we don't know if any of these are correct, or if there is a better explanation yet to be discovered. But each is a plausible hypothesis, only one of which involves the universe originating from nothing. And that one comes along with a plausible explanation of how that could be the case without invoking the supernatural.
The Big Bang Theory says that the universe began.
No, it says that the universe was compressed into a singularity about 13.8 billion years ago. Where the singularity came from, how long it existed before that, or even if a question of before the singularity is a meaningful question, are all unsettled matters at this point in history. Meaning, ultimately, we don't even know if the universe did begin or has always existed in some form or other.
Scientists like Albie hope that the universe always existed, because they didn't want those pesky questions of where it came from turning up.
First off, I'd just like to point out that the implication that Einstein was trying to suppress curiosity about the origins of the universe is just flat out insulting to his memory. Secondly, in Einstein's day, the static universe was one of the leading hypotheses. When the expansion of space-time was discovered, the steady state as championed by Fred Hoyle became the competing hypothesis to the Big Bang. And fun fact, Big Bang is actually a misnomer for what it represents, and was the result of Hoyle speaking derisively about it. Einstein initially favored the static universe, and he was not happy when it was demonstrated that, as a direct result of his theory of relativity, space-time was expanding. He did toy with some calculations that essentially mirrored Hoyle's steady-state hypothesis some 20 years before Hoyle came up with it himself, but he never published anything about it. So, Einstein was wrong, a fact that news outlets love to point out anytime we disprove any of the smallest ideas that he may have held, as though being a brilliant scientist somehow means that all of your ideas must be right, and it's shocking to find some that weren't. So, Einstein probably did think that the universe was eternal. You bring this up as though it is supposed to be evidence that scientists are struggling to make the universe not appear to be created when it obviously is, but that's just not the case. I mean, look at Arthur Eddington, a devoutly religious Quaker. He also objected to the Big Bang because he thought it suggested a mystical moment of creation, and that's not how he thought God would work.
Unfortunately for our white-haired friend over here, the idea that the universe is eternal is wrong. Dead wrong.
Not necessarily. It's just that the universe as we know it cannot be eternal.
Turns out the universe is expanding, which means it must have expanded from somewhere.
Yes, from a singularity. The universe having expanded from a singularity does not say anything about the origin of that singularity. And I suppose it bears mentioning again that the word singularity, when used in physics, is more of a mathematical concept than a physical one. Mathematically, a singularity exists when the property of a thing approaches infinity. Specifically in cosmology, we're talking about a gravitational singularity and the properties used to measure gravitational fields being the ones that approach infinity. And actually, there are a few hypotheses out there that don't even propose a singularity as the origin point. Loop quantum gravity, for instance, proposes that there is a minimum distance beyond which gravity no longer continues to increase, thereby eliminating the singularity from the equation. So, if there was a singularity, it's more of a mathematical concept than a necessarily physical one, and there are hypotheses emerging that do away with the concept of a singularity altogether. So, yeah, the universe began expanding 13.8 billion years ago. What state was it in before that expansion began? We don't know. Any other answer presented as a definitive solution is dishonest.
If something began, it had to have been begun.
I assume that by being begun, you mean that there was sufficient causation? I would agree with that. A fire began. What made it begin? A lightning strike. Does this beginning have to have intention or consciousness behind it? I would argue no.
Right? Us religious folk have always had an answer.
Always having had an answer does not mean that your answer is automatically a good answer. This falls into the trap of believing that any answer at all, no matter how absurd, is better than no answer. I'd prefer to just get used to having to say, I don't know sometimes. It's more honest to admit a lack of knowledge than to insist that any old made-up answer is better than not knowing.
We say that there had to have been an eternal entity which always existed, and which begins universes like ours. We call that eternal entity, drumroll please, God.
That's nice. I call that eternal entity the Flying Spaghetti Monster. There, we've both answered the question. Now, which of our answers is more likely to be true? How would we even go about testing that? Both God and the Flying Spaghetti Monster are unfalsifiable hypotheses, and so neither can be adequately tested. You, I imagine, completely dismiss my idea of the Flying Spaghetti Monster as being patently absurd, and I actually agree with that. In fact, being patently absurd is largely the point of the Flying Spaghetti Monster. It has the same properties that are largely attributed to the various other gods, so why is it less valid of an answer than your god?
On the other hand, atheists are left empty-handed.
Right. We're left with the more honest answer of, I don't know, instead of just making stuff up.
They're hoping that if they stare at the universe long enough, they'll figure it out.
Well, there doesn't appear to be any God communicating scientific truths to us, so yeah, it's up to us to figure it out.
Well, staring at the universe won't tell you about what produced the universe when it didn't exist, so good luck with that.
Maybe not, but figuring out more details about how the universe works will allow us to create more accurate models of the origin of the universe, which may, at some point in the future, lead to the discovery of a model which adequately explains everything in terms that our primate brains can comprehend. It's a long shot, and in my opinion is rather unlikely, but it's a lot better than just straight up making shit up and then pretending that your made-up shit is superior purely on the grounds that it is an answer to a potentially unanswerable question.
2. The fine-tuning of the universe, aka, why are you here?
How in God's name is the fine-tuning of the universe the equivalent of the question, why are you here? Would a better equivalence not be, how are you here?
The universe is kind of like that. No, not like porridge. It's just right for life.
It depends entirely on how you look at it. The way I see it, damn near 100% of the universe will instantly kill most life as we know it, with some very few extreme files maybe being able to survive for a while in the vacuum of space. Looking at you, tardigrades. So, actually, using that metric, the universe is better suited to tardigrades than to humans. So, if God exists, then clearly God is a tardigrade, and the rest of life exists purely to provide fertilizer for the algae that the tardigrades eat.
If the early conditions or the basic laws of the universe were even a little bit different, life could never exist.
Well, that depends. You see, the main consideration in this assertion is the idea that stars are necessary to life. We need a source of heat to power life, after all. Some of the constants can be changed, and the production of stars would still happen, albeit in different proportions. For instance, the strong force coupling constant can be increased by an estimated 50%, and stars would still form. That's a pretty big range for potential variation. And on top of all that, it's possible that there is only one fundamental constant of the universe from which all the other constants are derived. And the fact of the matter is that we actually can't know that until we successfully develop a theory of quantum gravity. But if it does turn out that there is only one fundamental constant, then we definitely don't need fine-tuning to explain how all of the different constants could have ended up where they are. As it is, fine-tuning is already a weak argument because it relies on assumptions about the nature of the constants that cannot be known at this time. For one, it assumes that all potential values for these constants are equally likely, making the values that they end up at appear to be a statistical impossibility no matter what they end up being, and we just don't have enough information to actually know whether or not that is the case.
For instance, the following list shows you just a few examples of how sensitive the universe is to change.
That's an odd way to phrase it. It's not about sensitivity to change, it's about whether or not the universe as we know it could have formed had those values been different than they are. And while there are some 25 known physical constants, it is unknown at this time whether these constants are truly fundamental, meaning that it is possible that they are interdependent or that they could all be dependent on one constant, or that there are even more constants that are as yet undiscovered and they are all fundamental. Without more information, this entire argument just breaks down to life as we know it developed in a universe that is capable of supporting life as we know it, which is tautological at its core.
If any of these ratios changed even a tiny amount, it would be physically impossible for you and I to exist.
For some of them, yes, that is true. For others, no, that is not true. For others still, it is unknown.
And that would be a tragedy. But instead of getting all mopey-eyed about it, we should be asking ourselves, what are the chances?
At this time, the chances are impossible to calculate because we don't have enough information.
If the universe just popped into existence by accident, whatever that means...
That means you're presenting a straw man of the scientific position rather than bothering to try and understand even one of the many different hypotheses about the origin of the universe. It's ignorance and laziness on your part.
The chances would be effectively zero.
In order to arrive at the chances being effectively zero, you have to first assume that all potential values for the physical constants have an equal probability of occurring, which we don't know is actually the case.
But if the universe was designed with the specific purpose of producing life, like every religion says...
Then the designer sucks at his job, since basically everywhere in the universe is hostile to life. Praise be to tardigrade God.
Then that would explain a lot, wouldn't it?
No, it would not. That would leave me with many more questions about the supposedly intelligent designer's design choices.
3. Origins and Evolution, aka Stardust, turns into little cells that turn into little people. Aww.
If you are against evolution, then you can't really use the physical constants of the universe as an argument. That entire argument is based around providing conditions in the universe which make the evolution of life possible. So to present that and then turn around and deny evolution is a bit nonsensical. Whether or not it was possible for stars to form 1 to 200 million years after the Big Bang, so about 13.6 to 13.7 billion years ago, is an irrelevant question if you believe the universe to be only about 6,000 years old. But maybe I'm jumping the gun. Maybe this person is an old Earth creationist who accepts old ages for things and so accepts the scientific model for the formation of the universe and later the Earth without accepting evolution. That would be a slightly more consistent position to hold. It doesn't really make sense to me, but maybe they can make it work.
Did you ever play with Lego? If so, let me ask you a question. If you take a box of broken up Lego and shake it up, how likely is it that a Lego building drops out?
Not likely at all. Now let me ask you a question, or a couple of questions. Does Lego reproduce? Are there selection pressures that push certain configurations of bricks to be more favorable to Lego reproduction than others? If the answer to either of these questions is no, then this analogy is not applicable.
Just as we know it's practically impossible for building blocks with no will of their own to come together to produce useful and interesting things.
Quite incorrect. Doctors Rachel Armstrong and Martin Hanchick have demonstrated lifelike behavior in self-forming protocells that are made out of essentially just salt, water, and oil. They demonstrate behaviors that include seeking resources, reproducing, hybridizing, and more. I find that quite interesting, and it could very well be a step that was useful in the development of life on Earth.
We also know that dead chemicals should not be able to arrange themselves into living systems.
Do we know that? We know that the building blocks of such systems can form spontaneously in nature under many different conditions. We know that non-living protocells can form spontaneously and behave in a very lifelike manner in plausible prebiotic conditions. We know that some chemicals that would have been relatively abundant on the early Earth can spontaneously react to form nucleosides, which is one of the base units of RNA. We just haven't quite figured out how it all came together yet. But really, this is a matter of life being a gestalt of sorts. That is, the whole is greater than the sum of its parts. We are quite literally made of nothing but dead chemicals, as you put it. There is nothing particularly special about the molecules that make up any living thing. They're just molecules. Each cell by itself is just a cell. It doesn't have consciousness. It doesn't think. It doesn't feel. It just is and does what it does based on its chemistry. The fact that we have consciousness is fascinating, but at the end of the day, it does appear to be a byproduct of the reactions of these dead chemicals, seeing as how we can alter it with the application of other chemicals.
The chance arrangement of DNA to produce even a simple protein is mind-bogglingly unlikely.
Yeah, which is why nobody is proposing that a fully functional DNA to mRNA to protein system was the first living system to evolve, instead proposing things like the RNA world hypothesis, which has its basis in the fact that RNA is a simpler molecule than DNA, and it can fold itself in ways that mimic the behavior of proteins, so it doesn't necessarily need all of the transcription and translation mechanisms in order to function.
Now imagine millions of these proteins working together in millions of cells to produce living beings like you and I.
Well, the first living beings would not have involved millions of cells working together. They would have been single-celled organisms at first. Much simpler, much easier. And the development of multicellularity turns out to be a rather simple evolutionary step. So it's really the aggregate of a bunch of steps that are known to be rather simple, with a few unknowns scattered in between that are currently being researched.
If you honestly think that this is the product of random processes, then perhaps you need to go back to the Lego box.
Natural selection is not a random process. Mutations can be random, but they have non-random pressures applied to them through their environment. And so, life develops that is capable of surviving in the environments in which it develops. So to analogize, everyone knows the story of the million monkeys with typewriters and how it would take a ridiculously long time for them to type out one of Shakespeare's plays because they are all just banging on their keyboards randomly. Well, that would be like mutations. They are fairly random. But the selection pressures would be like, after every round of banging, the ones with the letters most closely matching those needed for a part of whichever play we're trying to write are kept and expanded on, while those least like the play are discarded. And yeah, I know this is an imperfect analogy because it has a predetermined goal in mind, while evolution does not. There are many ways an organism can adapt to an environment, but there is only one way to match the text of a play that has already been written. So that's why we have diversity. It's different adaptations to the same environment among different populations. That's it for this one. Today's comment of the day comes to us from Gurs, who says, amphibious octopi, think about it. Which I mainly chose as an excuse to show you this time lapse I made with my 3D printer. But that comment was originally an answer to another comment of the day where the commenter was asking what animal I think would have evolved civilization if humans hadn't done it first. Octopus was one of the common answers, and one of my favorite science fiction series actually included a civilization of advanced spacefaring octopuses in what I thought was a very clever way. Well, the sentient jumping spiders were featured in Book 1. The octopuses didn't show up until Book 2. The Children of Time series is good. You should read it, is my main point here. Thanks for watching. Special thanks as always to my patrons, Lynn Dobbs, Mark McManus, What Jesus, and all the rest, who are the physical constants which allow my channel to form. If you'd like to give me life just by being exactly the way you are, you can join us on Patreon for as little as $1 per week over at patreon.com/vicerhino. If you feel so inclined, you can also support the channel through direct donation or my Amazon wishlist, which are linked in the description. If you'd like to listen to my videos in podcast form, the link for that is also in the description, as well as links to my social media accounts and my P.O. Box address. See you next time!